We're looking at chapter 3 mostly, and we looked at Udara D, a person who has a broader outlook than regarding demigod worship and materialism. And we looked at how Krishna is superior to the demigods, and how there are greater gains by worshipping Krishna than the demigods. We also had quite an extensive look at the description of society in terms of hogs, dogs, camels and asses. So, and hopefully that was helpful for the open book essay. Question number 2, which covers that. So today we're going to look at 5 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And it's a general overview. In chapter 4, being asked by Sukadeva Maharaj, Sukadeva Goswami describes the process of creation through a conversation that was spoken by Brahma to Narada, when Narada asked similar questions. Prigit Maharaj, hearing that he should fix his mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, decides to do that, and therefore he's asking various questions which help him to fix his mind upon the Lord. So in the beginning he wants to fix his mind upon the Lord, how he manifests his pastimes in relationship to Maya Shakti, or the material energy. Because the intention is that later he will ask Sukadeva Goswami questions relating to Krishna's internal spiritual potency, but for now he's asking about his pastimes in relationship to his Maya Shakti. So he asked various different questions. Sukadeva Goswami in verses 11 to 25 begins to glorify Lord Krishna, and he prays for the ability to answer Maharaj Prigit's inquiry, and he does this. And then at the end he begins to describe that conversation between Narada Muni and Brahma. So in the course of this conversation, of course, in discussing the Supreme Lord, especially describing the power of the Lord, the power of the Lord manifests in relationship to the material world through his expansions as the Purush avatars, so Mahavishnu, Garbhodakshay Vishnu, Kshiradakshay Vishnu. You know, it's through them that we actually see Krishna, you know, manifesting his pastimes in relationship to his material energy. So therefore we see that different descriptions of those Purusha avatars are given. As far as understanding, you know, the Lord in any of his features or incarnations, practice. So, Sukadeva Swami also describes a little bit about the potency of the Lord as it manifests through Bhakti Yoga. After offering various prayers, Sukadeva Goswami offers his respects to his spiritual master Srila Vyasadeva and to the Lord himself as Vasudeva. In the fifth chapter we actually then hear the conversation between Brahma and Narada, and Narada Muni of course questions Brahma as to whether there is someone more powerful than Lord Brahma in relationship to the creation of the material world. And Brahma answers that question. Yes, that is the Supreme Lord, Narayan. There's about 10 or so questions that are asked by Parikshit Maharaj, and gradually Lord Brahma answers those questions related to the creation, and towards the end of the chapter of course he, in describing creation, he also describes after the principle of creation how Garbhadakshaya Vishnu enters within the creation as the universal form. So that's a summary of what we're going to look at. Did everyone get through the fourth and fifth chapters? Okay, you know, doesn't look very far. Yourself? Okay. Who else is?
Going through the translation.
That's good. Something. Yourself? Okay, that's good. Yeah. It's this chapter is actually very revealing in different ways, in a very practical way for us who are attempting, you know, to do this bhakti by bhava course. You know, it's a big ask. It's a big, you know, big mission, you know, to study for the very systematically the six cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, when you begin, you know, the room full of devotees are all very eager, but you know, just, you know, one by one, it's, you know, it's just different obstacles and so many different obstacles. But, yeah, but so this is a very, very interesting chapter. Every student should take note of, because it actually gives the key to how to be successful. You know, for those who actually seriously want to finish the Bhakti by Bhava, completed, passed, certificate, they need to take the clues that are given here by Sukadeva Goswami. So let's discuss what Sukadeva Goswami is saying, how he can help us in a very practical way. Yeah. Maharaj Parikshit, we see one of the first Purva Svadhyaya questions, of course. We're going to answer these as we go through. Basically about the questions, Hare Krishna. The Parikit Maharaj asks how it is answered beginning with the prayers of Sukadeva Goswami. First question is explain why the word Satim applies well to Maharaj Parikit. Coming from the first verse of the fourth chapter. Satim Matim. Satim. So who said they answered that question? What was your answer? Yep. So let's take the easy one first. In what way is chase applicable? Which way did you take existing to apply? Who answered that first question?
When one worships only Krishna.
Yeah. So how do we apply existing? How does the word? We're looking at the first Purvashvajaya question. Explain the word Satim. Why Satim applies well to Maharaj Parikit? Yes. In other words, his mind was already Satim Matim. His mind is already fixed on Krishna. It's already existing in him. Chaste means that he never deviated from that throughout the course of his life. His mind was fixed on Krishna since birth. So Krishna consciousness, mind fixed on Krishna, that quality was existing within him since birth, and because he continued that, it means he was chaste to that. Krishna gave him that opportunity and he remained chaste and took advantage of that opportunity throughout the course of his life. Question 2, which we take from verses 2 to 4, explain how Maharaj Parikit was able to give up all family attachments and the regulated activities of religion, economic development and sense gratification. What have you got on that, Bhakti Sara, from verses 2 to 4? Yep, that's from the translation, right? Is that right? Yep. So he had wholehearted attraction for Krishna, and thus he was able to give up all deep-rooted affection. Yep.
He was already attracted to Krishna, and he was doing all the royal duties on behalf of Krishna. It wasn't like at a point he renounced. He was already.
Yes. Yeah. Yep, so he was continually practicing that, yeah. So it wasn't just a sudden jump. Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah. Yep, yeah, that's to it or to text to as well. One who seriously heard Srimad Bhagavatam from the fifth personality like Sukadeva Goswami, of course. That's another very important thing, because if one hears Srimad Bhagavatam from the wrong person, that may not have such a good effect. Yep, by his, that's right, by his slight association with Sukadeva Goswami, he could perfectly understand Lord Krishna. Another little statement which sums up really all of those, also in the purport of verse 2, it says, by the grace of the Lord he was able to give up all connections with material attachments. His meeting Sukadeva Goswami, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, that was all the grace of the Lord. Being trained by the, you know, the Pandavas from the very beginning, that's all the grace of the Lord. All of those things that we mentioned there all come under that category as well. Very good. It's good to see that you've selected, you know, so many good points there. Exactly what I have here. That's good, very good. There's an analogy there, which is a significant analogy in verse 5, that when a hungry man is given food to eat, he feels satisfaction of hunger and the pleasure of dining simultaneously. A satiation of hunger and the pleasure of dining simultaneously. Thus he does not have to ask whether he has actually been fed or not. The crucial test of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is that one should get positive enlightenment by such an act. So those verses are describing that Maharaj Prickett was able to give up family attachments. Plus, you know, the regulative activities of religion, economic development, sense gratification, a lot of the things that we follow for basically material benefits on different levels. The Acharyas actually list this verses 3 to 4 as examples that the Srimad Bhagavatam is giving of a Shakti, just out of interest. Shakti is the description of a person who is completely detached, 100% detached from the material world, and completely attached to Krishna. That's a Shakti, the level of a Shakti. Shakti, one who has great love or prema bhakti for Krishna, such as Prickett Maharaj, then it includes all the other qualities such as a Shakti. So it's not saying that Maharaj is on the platform of Shakti, it's saying that he's on the platform of prema, but the qualities of a Shakti at least are in there. You know, to give an example, that one who is influenced by Shakti, in the second chapter of the 11th canto, text 39, it describes that an intelligent person who has controlled his mind and conquered fear should give up attachment to material objects such as wife, family and nation, and should wander freely without embarrassment, hearing and chanting the holy names of the Lord. There's another example of how one practically practices the platform of the Shakti. So, we see here that Sudha Goswami is speaking to the sages of Naimisharanya. They've asked him to describe more of what the conversation between Sukadeva Goswami and Brigit Maharaj. So then in text number 5, of course, we see that Suti Goswami describes in verses 3 to 4 Maharaj Brihat. He asks the same questions about creation and what have you as the sages asked Suti Goswami. We see in the previous chapter that the sages of Naimisharanya, they basically asked Suti Goswami, you please tell us everything which is related to Krishna. If you look at verses 14 to 16, the sages' questions are reflected in those couple of verses in the third chapter. So the questions that they asked were asked similar questions by Parikit Maharaj, and of course the questions of Parikit Maharaj were similar questions that Narada asked Brahma, and we get the answer to all of them through Brahma's answer to Narada. Now they asked, why does Parikit Maharaj ask about the process of creation in verses 6 to 10 of the fourth chapter? So that's the one of our homework questions, number 3. So who's got some little pearls of wisdom relating to that? Why does Maharaj Brigitte ask about the process of creation? Say that last thing again.
Can't dive straight away into the rasa lila.
Yep.
Without appreciating the greatness of the Lord.
Yep. Are you quoting from a particular purport? I know that's there. I'm testing your thumb memory. Alright, you've got the back of a thumb swirling around his head. Good. It's good to have that when your memory, you know, is taken from the proper sections of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's good. It is verse 6 describes that in the purport, Prabhupada explains, neither the king nor the great speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam jumped up like organizers of the Bhagavatam. Both of them proceeded systematically so that future readers and hearers might take lessons from the example of the procedure of reciting Srimad Bhagavatam. Yeah. So that's exactly what we said there. As Prabhupada says further, those in the material world must first of all know how the external energy is working. And afterwards one may try to enter in the activities of the internal energy. Prabhupada also says the neophyte devotee, instead of jumping up at once to the platform of transcendental pastimes presented by the internal energy of the Lord, may know how great the Supreme Lord is by inquiring about the process of his creative energy. And there's a very serious warning by Krishnadas Kaviraj that it's actually, one should very seriously be on guard against that pitfall. You know, neglecting knowledge of how great Krishna is. We described that pastime this morning in the Srimad Bhagavatam. how easy it is to do for Lord Brahma, one is not fixed in knowledge of how great it is. Even someone on the platform of Lord Brahma can become bewildered seeing Krishna as an ordinary cowherd boy, especially when they hear that he's, you know, having midnight rendezvous with the gopis. Very, you know, it's a great danger. Only when one knows Lord Krishna's greatness can one firmly put one's unflinching faith in him. Otherwise, like the common man, even the great leaders of men will mistake Lord Krishna for one of the many demigods, or a historical personality, or a myth only. One attains that platform, that transcendental platform, by a gradual process of service and inquiries. So this is what we see in the behaviour, the example that has been set by Bhagavan Maharaj. Yes. Very, very important. You know, we must understand the greatness. We should never neglect understanding the greatness of Krishna. Otherwise we may mistake his pastimes to be something other than God's pastimes. What else have we got on this point? Why does Maharaj Pripit ask about the process of creation in verses 6 to 10?
So the Leela of the Lord, so last time, the deal of creation.
It is a pastime of the Lord, in the sense that one should not distinguish any of the pastimes or the activities of the Lord as inferior or superior. You know, they're all connected with the Lord. They're all transcendentally important, equally important. Also, in the beginning of that purport, Prabhupada explains that, you know, for every unknown thing we have to learn and inquire from a learned personality. It's a good example shown by Parikit Maharaj. In future, people need to know that if you want to learn something, don't just guess or speculate. Inquire from someone who knows, who's actually learning. What to speak of, you know, isn't that the problem that we have today with the research college? We were discussing this morning in class. You know, the effects of, they want to test the effects of beer and weightlessness. They drop a capsule from a very high height, the beer becomes weightless in the capsule, and they want to see what happens to it. Because they want to understand, you know, what will happen to people when they drink beer and they send them down their face. Because they're all going to want beer. So, they're doing research. And the world is full, you know, we have our whalers in the ocean killing hundreds of whales for research. We have all sorts of research. We have our moon rocks that want to spend billions of dollars for research to bring back. So, you know, it's a very simple statement here that you're better off just to ask someone to know. You know, there's two ways you can go about it. You can spend hundreds of billions of dollars and bring back some moon rocks, and then you've got to keep them at $1 million a day over many decades and study them and then track them down and you can stole them from your moon rock police. You've got to pay them. Or you can just ask someone who knows. Now, what's it going to be? Okay. So that's another reason he asked. He set that example. Interesting also in this purport that Maharaj Bhrigu also, he already knew. It's already known to Bhrigu Maharaj that everything we see is born out of the energy of the Lord. He already knew that. And it was discussed by Sukadeva Goswami in the very beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam. In Vyasadeva's famous prayer, the first verse. So, Bhrigu Maharaj wanted to know the process of creation. The origin he knew, that's coming from the Lord. But what is the process? So he's asking, how does the personality of Godhead by his different energies create this phenomenal world? That means he already knew the personality of Godhead is doing it. So he is actually expanding on the information he's given and getting further information. So again, they're very intelligent. For a lot of people though, for many centuries, people of different religions have asked the question, how the material world was created, and some people in the Bible or the Quran, they'll say, oh God, thanks very much, see you in church next week. That's it. Now, of course, people are asking the question, about how did he do it? And because they don't know, they can't answer that, then people are, you know, leaving the churches and mosques by the hundreds, by the thousands. So it's very important that someone's, you know, questions in search of, you know, intelligent, you know, one intelligent answer, one must be able to give, you know, if it's just dogmatic and it doesn't satisfy the intelligence, the logic and the reason, that is not very, then people will not be able to put their faith very well in God, God who appears in the form of Krishna, little cowherd boy. So, someone tell me how Prabhupada gives an example of how he would reasonably tackle that sort of inquiry. To satisfy someone's sense of reason and logic in that regard. We're discussing it's not enough just to say, you know, you ask the question, how was creation made? Oh, God did it. Okay? I want to know more. First of the centuries. I want to know how he did it. If you tell me that, I'll believe in God. Otherwise, I can't understand. How did Prabhupada tackle a question like that? To satisfy someone's logic and reason, what did he say?
Since he has said this, but I don't know if it's appropriate to this question. He said that if you want to know this, you have to ask your mother.
Yes, that in essence is proving that we should accept authority. doing it. It's in one of his analogies. Prabhupada gives this analogy. Anyone got it there? What's that? Yeah, what, read it out.
Foolish people say that the creative energy is independent and acts automatically as electrical energy works. But the intelligent man knows that even the electrical energy is generated by an expert engineer in the localized powerhouse.
It's just a very nice example, very simple. But you know, if you explain that to someone, even a simple person will accept that. You know?
But what can you say to a person
He's giving an example of how that the common man also knows that creation is made by some creator and is not created automatically. We have no experience in the practical world that a thing is created automatically. So all these people say that the creative energy is independent and acts automatically, as electrical energy works. See, so they're, you know, saying that God does not employ a process to create the material world, and they give you electrical energy. That's their example. And that intelligent person will say, well, no, actually, electricity, that's actually generated by an expert engineer in the local powerhouse. So you know, you can picture sometimes, you know, they might be in trouble. People and sometimes abused, you know. Now, one day I was at home living in Sri Lanka and I heard this kid, no. I'm thinking, I'll go and see, you know, if he's alright. So I looked around, of course, there were no parents. I don't know where the parents were, they all gone out. And there were a couple of boys that big, and they were playing, they were inside watching TV. But one of them was in the shed, and there were wooden beams, you know, running along the floor. So he'd been climbing up, and he stood down between the wooden beam and the wall. His arms were like this, and the weight of his body was suffocating him. So he was like, you know, just pressing his chest like that. The look on his face, because the center of a lot of problems like that. I came and saved him. You know, you can see, you know, he's thinking, oh, that's the door, and I ended up saving him. So he always, you know, that was it. It changed the whole family, you know. But You know, I assume the parents would be there, but you just got to be careful. You know, you hear them crying out, you never know. Anyway. yes, for instance, if we take that example of an electrical engineer, we get the picture of a person, you know, who's been trained to work with the energy and to manipulate that energy through his various, you know, apparatus and what have you, to make that energy as powerful as it is to do all the things that he wants it to do. So he's got a process, you know, and a person can picture that. Yeah, I can see him doing that. Otherwise, electricity, you know, is quite a magical, you know, like that. Trickery, you know, very magical sort of thing. But you know, when you have that example, then you can also picture God working with energy, you know, with his knowledge and intelligence in a way to make things happen, you know, almost mechanically in one sense. So it sort of it opens up a person's mind that a powerful person, well trained with knowledge, can manipulate powerful energy. Okay. So you know, and then from that point on, then the person. So okay, so then we can explain a little bit more detail how he's doing it. But at least the concept, the person will be open to the concept. Yeah, so let me show them the picture of Krishna. see, it's not so hard. Yeah. You know, decades and decades on the wrong track finish within one sentence. You know, why not? What do I think of that? That's a fact. Yeah. One may say, you know, one may have the picture that God is very old, but if you actually look at, you know, sometimes you look at something that's being created and you may get a sense of a very youthful, energetic person behind that creation. And if we actually look at the material creation, it's, you know, it doesn't necessarily send the picture of a very old, worn out, you know, tired, weary person. You know, the way the material world is functioning, with its beauty and its artistry and, you know, colours, you know, and the, you know, the romantic sort of, you know, atmosphere of some of the, you know, beautiful places, it doesn't necessarily give an impression of a very old, worn out, you know, man with no intelligence or, you know, no imagination left. So you know, even from the creation itself, you know, you just logically say, someone who's very vibrant, intelligent, and, you know, energetic, full of life, full of energy, person, supreme person, is actually behind material creation. That's more logical than an old, weary person. Now, on this same point, we are looking at, what are we looking at? Why did Maharaj Prigat ask about the process of creation? We're looking at verses 6 to 10. Now, after verse 10, And that is one of the points that Nanda brought up, that Prabhupada, quoting Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, offering his very good counsel to interested Vaishnavas, that he says that they should not be interested in hearing only about the Lord's activities like Rasa Leela, but must be keenly interested in his pastimes and his features of the Purusha past in connection with Srishti Tattva, creation. In his commentary, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, those pastimes should not be leered at. Isn't it strange enough, people, some so-called Vaishnavas, do leer at those pastimes. So, Maharaj Parikshit's questions are, you know, very good, you know, quite searching. You know, verse 7 we see, kindly describe how the Supreme Lord engages his different energies and different expansions in maintaining and again winding up the phenomenal world in the sporting spirit of a player. You know, it's quite a, there's a whole lot of different components there. You know, if someone it's a really, really nice question. Really, the answer to that gives you a really good look at the process of creation. In verse 8 in the purport, we also see Prabhupada mentions again that, you know, Maharaj Parikshit's statement discloses that he knew everything of the process of creation. You know, his question itself, why then did he ask for such information? Prabhupada explains that, you know, being a great devotee, he was quite able to know, he's coming in the line of considerably about the creation of the world. He knew a lot. He knew a huge amount about creation from it. But that much knowledge was not sufficient. So even someone coming in the line like Parikshit Maharaj, he knew so much. But still, it was not sufficient. He said, therefore, that even greatly learned scholars fail to know about that even after great effort. The Lord is unlimited. His activities are also unfathomed. With a limited source of knowledge and with imperfect senses, any living being up to the standard of Brahma can never imagine knowing about the unlimited. So, you know, it's a subject matter that even a person like Parikshit Maharaj and even great demigods like Lord Brahma should inquire to the full capacity of their intelligence, because it is such, you know, the knowledge contained within that subject is so vast, so you know, inconceivably wonderful. It's not sufficient, just, you know, a casual question won't do it. So he's also, you know, Brigham Maharaj is also, by his questions and the type of questions, is showing, you know, how keenly we should inquire into such, you know, someone who's, otherwise it's just a farce, it's like a show, you know. How does the Lord create? We look at the creation, you know, quite an amazing thing. How did he do that? You really want to understand, you've really got to look into it and ask some, you know, serious questions to think about that. So he's showing this by his example. And of course, as we described before, by asking someone who knows, Parikshit Maharaj is showing that you cannot know by any other process except when that knowledge comes from the Supreme Himself and teaches the disciples succession. Then, you know, he describes, why is he asking Sukadeva? So we can ask, you see, he's asking questions, certain type of questions. Why ask Sukadeva Goswami? Because you are not only vastly learned in the Vedic literatures and self-realized, but are also a great devotee of the Lord. So, you know, this is, here's Sukadeva Goswami. Even, you know, all the great personalities have selected that, yes, let's Sukadeva Goswami speak. You know, amongst all the great sages of Sanskrit here, let him speak. He's a great devotee, self-realized, vastly learned. Why wouldn't you ask him the most difficult question in that creation? And it describes, and therefore you are as good as the personality of Godhead. There's another reason why you should ask those questions. The Krishna, in essence, is admitting that the Supreme Lord, even in his pastimes with Maya Shakti, the creation of the material world, is practically inconceivable. But a powerful devotee of the Lord is, by the grace of the Lord, more than the Lord himself. Not only is the devotee of the Lord more powerful than the Lord, but also worship of the devotee is considered more effective than direct worship of the Lord. So, therefore, because such a devotee is Sukadeva Goswami, whatever would not have been, you know, even a lifetime of searching for other answers through the Vedas, taking advantage of all the saints he's met, taking advantage of the knowledge passed down by his forefathers. Now, practically, he might be asking some of the same questions again. So why not when you have Sukadeva Goswami sitting there in front of you? Like that. So in this way, we see the... We can become perfect just by examining the questions. We can go back to Godhead just by looking at Maharaj's previous questions. We haven't even got to the answers yet. Let us look at verses 12 to 24, which pretty much is the rest of this chapter. And the final Purvaswajaya question is, analyze the prayers of Sukadeva Goswami. We were talking about at the beginning of the class. In particular. we see in verse 11 that he systematically remembers the master of the senses, Lord Shri. While offering respects to the Lord and the Guru, basically he begins to answer. That's the mood of these prayers. Verse 12, let me offer my respectful obeisances under the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the creation of the mature world that accepts the three modes of mature nature. He is the complete whole, residing within the body of everyone, and his ways are inconceivable. So, you know, in essence, in these 13 verses, he's offering respects to the Supreme Lord, and in essence, as Prabhupada mentions in his purport, you know, Lord Krishna, being the origin of all Vishnu tattvas, is addressed here as Tadapumam or Purushottama. He is the complete whole. So he first of all offers respect to Lord Krishna. You are the supreme, complete personality of Godhead who I am offering respect to. Because all these Purusha avatars who deal with creation, they're your expansion. So I'm offering you respect. And it is your power and how you, you know, utilize your power that is being discussed in these answers. So when we talk about the power of Mahavishnu, Gavilaksha Vishnu, Shivalaksha Vishnu, we're talking about Krishna's power. So he's offering respect. So I'm talking about you, Krishna. You are the complete whole. But, you know, it's not that they are someone different and they have some power and you have some power. You, this is your power. I'm offering respect to you. So, of course, he describes the different Purusha avatars that who for the creation of the material world accepts the three modes of mature nature. That is Mahavishnu. He is a complete whole residing within the body of everyone. So Gavilakshay Vishnu resides within the universe and then expands again in Shivalakshay Vishnu. So in this way, very little summary of, you know, their potency, how their power is beginning to take effect. In verse 13, I again offer my respectful obeisances under the form of complete existence and transcendence, who is the liberator of the pious devotees from all distresses and the destroyer of the further advances in atheistic temperament of the non-devotee demons. For the transcendentalists who are situated in the topmost spiritual perfection, he grants their specific destinations. Now, Prabhupada in his purport starts to mention Krishna like a kind father. So, at first, Sukadeva Goswami in verse 5 is offering respects to Krishna and his power, which is manifest through the Purusha avatars. Here in this verse, he's offering respects to Krishna, you know, the sweetness of Krishna. In essence, as Prabhupada mentions, that it's a complete form of all existence, both material and spiritual. And just like a kind father, either in his favour to the devotees, and and his punishment of the demons, he is kind to everyone, because he is a complete existence for all individual existence. Any person within any existence, anywhere within the existence, whatever destination and result that they have achieved, they have to understand that's the kindness of Krishna. Because he is everybody's existence. Whatever we've achieved, and that becomes our existence, whether we've gone to Brahma Jyoti, we exist in Brahma Jyoti. We exist in the heavenly planets, or we're being punished in order to help us, you know, to be purified. All of those different existences are very kindly given by the Supreme Soul. So this is describing sweetness, you know, and the dealings of the Lord. In verse 14, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto him who is the associate of the members of the Yadu dynasty and who is always a problem for the non-devotees. He is the supreme enjoyer of both the material and spiritual worlds, yet he enjoys his own abode in the spiritual sky. There is no one equal to him because his transcendental opulence is immeasurable. Alright, what do you think? As you said, Sukadeva Goswami is systematically remembering, meditating upon the Lord, offering his respects. What do you think he's focusing on here? The associates. Can you elaborate? That's in a previous purport, was it? Was that in this purport?
No, but not in the purport.
Yeah. Prabhupada's purport. Prabhupada gives a few clues there, within his purport. Have a quick look at that. So, the essence is a combination of offering respect to Krishna's power and sweetness. One sense, we know that by his power he manifests all of existence, his voting in the spiritual world, that is the manifestation of his power. And his sweetness is he is dealing like a kind father in allocating people to those destinations. Where it describes here, in the verse, he is the supreme enjoyer of both the material and spiritual worlds, yet he enjoys his own abode in the spiritual sky. In essence, that there is describing that, you know, God's business is not just sitting up in a cloud, putting a tick in a book and putting another cross, that he has nothing to do except, you know, look at the living entity in the material world, giving them ticks and crosses, and then, you know, punishing this one, rewarding that one, and that he just sits there in that cloud for all of eternity, has nothing else to do. Occasionally he gets a little lunch break. you know, he is a supreme independent enjoyer, basically. His main activity is not necessarily reciprocating with the spirit souls in the material world. Who does that? Sorry? Someone has said plane of expansions, who are? Three Vishnus. And how do the three Vishnus, what do they do in order to disseminate and maintain religious principles and what have you? Kill demons and... Yeah, that's there. There are also many different incarnations. So Kalki will come. Some of the different incarnations will come and punish some of the big demons and destroy so many of their armies and what have you. Different incarnations will come and reward the pious and protect them and help them to maintain the religious principles. So that's all done. Krishna has nothing to do because it's all done by his expansions and incarnations. So for those who are non-devotees, there's always a problem, or as Prabhupada mentions in his purport, therefore the mundaners are always far, far away from him. But for the devotees, the Lord will always be available as an associate. So the example is given of the Yadus. So the Lord is certainly maintaining the existence of everyone, but as Prabhupada goes on pointing out, but we also have to understand that that's done by his different expansion and incarnation, because he's actually just enjoying a transcendental bliss in the spiritual realm, completely aloof from everything that's going on in the material world, and at the same time, by his expansions, everything is being done. And the for the pure devotees, as described here, he's actually the constant companion. So they, the pure devotees, actually get to associate with the Lord and enjoy with him. So in verse 15, let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the all auspicious Lord Sri Krishna, about whom glorification, remembrances, audience, prayers, hearing and worship can at once cleanse the effects of all sins of the performer. What does Sukadeva Goswami, what feature of Krishna do you think he is offering his respects for? He's offering respects to Krishna here. And just by hearing about him, it'll cleanse the effects of all sins. If I said, we met so and so, saw him out in the hallway, after Berthy. We met Berthy. I just walked past and just saw all my sins. You would think, person like that. So in this sense, Bhakti Goswami is describing, you know, Krishna's inconceivable purpose. He's got a hit for that, you know, all sin. You know, it's quite, you know. So the Prabhupada here describes in his purport that devotees need not be disappointed in the physical absence of the Lord. They may think of not being associated with him, but this devotional process can give the desired result of associating with the Lord. So just by becoming devotional service, the Lord can be fully present. That's again his inconceivable potency. And by that inconceivable potency, it actually purifies our existence. So charge, just the name, can surcharge the atmosphere spiritually. But gives this. There's a lecture there. He's saying, you know, we have to follow the authority. Someone says, simply by performing these processes, so Sukadeva Goswami says, simply by performing these processes, Shravan, Kirtan, Vishnu, what happens? This material contamination will be washed off. When is it washed off? Immediately, sir. Immediately, no waiting. Continuing this is offering his respects to Lord Sri Krishna, enjoining all people basically to take refuge in the Lord. And when they hear these different qualities, you know, people develop faith. That, you know, the jnanis or the highly intellectual, simply by surrendering unto him, without difficulty, they progress towards spiritual existence. So basically, even the great jnanis, verse 16. You know, even the great jnanis are worshipping Lord Sri Krishna because his potency is so inconceivable. You know, in other words, result. Even the jnanis, they hear and chant, remember Lord Sri Krishna, they'll attain their spiritual destination. Why bother with karma, jnana, yoga? Why bother with that? Krishna's potency is so inconceivable. You know, so someone came to the temple, and, you know, they got a little stick, a little bag, and all the coins over the shoulder. And I said, where are you up to? I'm going to the Himalayas. What are you going to do there? I'm going to meditate for 20 years and try and search out God and find God. Why bother? Just walk into the temple. I had said something similar. I didn't have the thing that I made it up. I have said to people that that is something extraordinary, and they said, why bother? You can just go into the temple and look at Krishna. You know, people do things in the sense of realization. we say prasadam in here, this used to be the prasadam, we used to sleep up here in this Brahma Tower. The men are sitting here, the ladies are sitting here, and this one here. There was a boy who used to come in those days. He used to come quite quickly, but whenever he'd offer his obeisances, he'd smack his hand like really hard. You really have to do that, you know. That's the head. Krishna will accept that. There's no need for it to accept it. He'd never listen any time. He'd just. And like, it wasn't carpet. It was the floor and here. So, you know, in essence, so Sukadeva goes something like that. He's so powerfully potent, you know, by hearing, chanting, remembering, everything is achieved. Even the Gyanis actually approach him for that reason, the intelligent ones. In verse 17, let me offer respectful obeisances unto the auspicious Lord Krishna again and again, because the great learned sages, the great performers of charity, the great workers of distinction, the great philosophers and mystics, the great chanters of Vedic hymns, the great followers of Vedic principles cannot achieve any fruitful result without dedication of such qualities, great qualities, to the service of the Lord. You know, in essence, he's glorifying inconceivable potencies of the Lord, and one taps into that through bhakti. So in essence now he's glorifying bhakti, which is a way to tap into the, you know, the benefits association with the Lord's inconceivable potency. Glorifying bhakti means we're encouraging everyone to take up bhakti. Why take up bhakti? Because everything else that you're doing, all your other spiritual activities, are useless without bhakti. So, you know, he's glorifying bhakti. Even great souls, great personalities, you know, and you see them. But if they don't have bhakti, basically they're condemned as useless. According to the Vedas, which Sukadeva Goswami is summarizing. Because they won't get the result. Except for the hard labor they're going through. Prabhupada brings it down to a very practical level. The expert leaders of godless human civilization, they cannot bring about faithful result in all their different attempts at education, advancement, and economic development, unless they are God conscious. And to become God conscious, one has to hear about the all auspicious Lord. Now, as a continuation of that thought, in verse 18, David Goswami describes all the different races of people which Prabhupada lists in his purport. Some of them are sinful from previous lifetimes and therefore have taken a particular birth, which indicates that they're sinful, and others have taken birth and their sinful activities in this particular birth. that they can all be purified by taking shelter of the devotees of the Lord, due to the Lord being, you know, his being the supreme power. So even a condemned sinner, just by a trace of bhakti, becomes successful. I just did a jagya for one of the devotees who comes to be regular. And of course, his friends. Who were a little bit inebriated. They were sort of from here, they were, you know, going to head off to the football. Now, these people have never been to a Krishna temple. They knew nothing about devotional service. They come because one of their friends had committed suicide and died. I performed a Shraddha because, fortunately, that the devotees who come here often, the Western body, he wanted, it was so unfortunate, he wanted to, somehow the Lord and save his soul, so we did the ceremony. So they were shut down, and of course they couldn't sit. They crossed, pointed at the ears and fire like this. And I thought, okay. So I said, maybe they want to sit on the chair. And they all used to, I just said, I was thinking if they sit on the chair, then I'd walk on their feet. So I didn't actually pick it up, so we brought up to the big bench and I sat on the chair. And, I sort of explained everything, which is basically the first time they'd heard anything different. I for a long time, but the shin bones, like that. And I said to them, we can all chant Hare Krishna. I said, in your best 40 voices, I want you to chant Hare Krishna like that. So. They all liked that, And so they all sat there chanting Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. And, some of them were completely intoxicated like this. This is good. Really, I'm serious. So, somehow or another, they came to the temple and chanted Hare Krishna and took some prasad and saw the deity like this, and walked around the fire and walked around and of course, when I looked at them, it reminded me a lot of myself. I think we laugh, but actually, my background was, very much like that. I look and laugh, but, going back 33 years, that was my position. In fact, I was intoxicated the night I was in Hare Krishna. I just a regular habit, for lunch, have something to eat, wash it down with a few beers, couple of cigarettes, and you go to my yoga practice in the city. I do yoga, finish my yoga, come out, another cigarette, couple of beers, like that. And then I saw the devotees on the street chanting, and I thought, what is this? And I just immediately attracted, literally followed them back to the temple. So, that's, the potency. And I've heard there was a temple president in New Zealand. He was also very similar to some of the people today. When the Hare Krishnas would walk past, chanting Hare Krishna, they would all be drinking beer and smoking and yelling and singing Hare, and they would throw their big hands and the temple president would walk. You get all the qualifications. But he became a sincere devotee. In your lifetime, you'll be surprised that you see. I mean, I'm not surprised because I look in the mirror, but you'll see how very, very sinful people. By Krishna's supreme power can actually become purified. And in some verses it describes as such persons, someone might say, you'll become purified next week to get a better birth. No, no, no. In this lifetime, your very body changes. In this very lifetime. But, I mean, personally, from, I mean, I've known you for how many years now? Years, home programs, the good old days, down in the eastern suburbs, down in, 10 years ago?
10 years.
I see a big change in, just the things you say, your questions, your reactions to the answers, your level of understanding, even, you know, your demeanor. Sometimes family members who live with each other a lot, you know, it's just like, you may not notice because you've seen each other daily, but when you see people at intervals, it's just a lot more evident. Of course, the taking shelter devotees means that they may not necessarily have much bhakti themselves. They've got a trace of bhakti enough to take shelter devotees, something, tiniest. You know, that's enough, basically, you know, to purify them. Someone may object. That's objecting. So here, he uses the word Prabhavishnave. No. Prabhavishnave, the Lord is very, very powerful. Prabhavishnave. It's not subject to logic in one sense because he is just so powerful. He's Prabhavishnave. Is a very powerful. Anyway, that's part of the discussion which comes up a little bit later, though we talked a lot of it there. He's so powerful he can do anything. In text 19 he says, he is the super soul and the supreme lord of all self-realized souls. He is the personification of the Vedas, religious scriptures and austerities. He is worshipped by Lord Brahma and Shiva and those who are transcendental to all pretensions. Being so revered, with awe and veneration, may that Supreme Absolute be pleased with me. First of all, he's saying that he alone is the Supreme Lord. So we discussed in essence bhakti. Prabhupada discusses in his purport a distinction between the, you know, the Nishkami devotees who have no desire except to serve the Lord, and others, the Bhuktikami, Muktikami, Siddhikami, he gives Arjuna as an example of someone who appeared to transform into a Nishkami. They're free from pretensions in the sense that they're worshipping the Lord, not asking for anything. In essence, he's saying that, you know, even those who may be a bit pretentious, they're often worshipping the Lord, but it's not quite worship because they really want something from him. They can be purified, but better still are the devotees who are unpretentious because they can actually know the Lord. Everyone is benefiting, but certainly the power of bhakti is that. He's saying that everyone worships the Lord and gets some benefit, but particularly those who are unpretentious, that actually got some quality of bhakti, especially if it's pure bhakti, the most benefit is there. But the Lord is kindly rewarding everyone, but it also, you know, Sri Kadeva Goswami is also explaining that, you know, he's offering his respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Parikshit Maharaj has asked him that you please tell me about the Supreme Lord, how he's doing so many of these things. Yes, I can tell you about this Lord. But he can only be understood by those who serve him with bhakti. So therefore, you know, in a devotional mood, in a mood of love, I offer my respects to him. Therefore, he can reveal himself to me and I can answer your questions. In verse 20, my Lord Sri Krishna, who is the worshipful Lord of all devotees, the protector and glory of all the kings of Andhika and Brijni in the Yadu dynasty, the husband of all goddesses of fortune, the director of all sacrifices, and therefore the leader of all living entities, the controller of all intelligence, the proprietor of all planets, spiritual and material, and the supreme incarnation on earth, the supreme all devotees, the merciful. So he's the protector and master of everyone, and he's actually the goal for everyone. See in the previous verse that Sukadeva Goswami is expressing that the Lord can be known through bhakti, and therefore he glorifies, gives his realization of that Supreme Lord, that he is the Supreme Master, the Supreme Goal, the Supreme Protector. In verse 21, it is the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna who gives liberation by thinking of his lotus feet at every second. Following in the footsteps of authorities, the devotee in trance can see the absolute truth. The learned mental speculators, however, think of him according to their whims. May the Lord be pleased with me. So, describing here again that by thinking of his lotus feet, as the authorities do, a devotee in trance can actually see the absolute truth. So he's praying, may that Lord, whose lotus feet I am meditating upon, be pleased with me. In other words, may he give me that knowledge, may I have that knowledge, may I see the absolute truth. One practice is Bhakti Yoga, Sukadeva Goswami described that. Through that, the Lord gives His grace, and through that grace, the Lord is revealed. Never by one's speculative power is the Lord revealed, or one's verbal jugglery. So, Prabhupada describes Sukadeva Goswami is not a mental speculator or compromiser of the theory as many ways, as many conclusions. Rather, he prays to the Lord only invoking his transcendental pleasure. This is the way of knowing the Lord. This is particularly significant for us because to understand Krishna, Krishna consciousness, his pure devotees, the science of God, the spiritual world. We've taken up that task to know that. And Sukadeva Goswami is showing us that for anyone here, including myself, to actually, you know, complete the course successfully depends upon one's having an attitude of bhakti or devotion to the Lord, whereby the Lord will reveal Himself. So we're hoping that the Lord will reveal Himself to us at least six cantos worth. You know, whatever happens, don't reveal yourself just two cantos worth. At least six. So we need to have six cantos worth of bhakti. And but you know, this is without that, it's surprising that because he is in control of each and every one of our lives. And we all know, you know, after how long we've been doing this, 1.5 years, 2 years, seems like 20. Yeah. How long when did we start? Beginning of last year, okay? Maybe 1.5 years? Yeah, really? That long? Oh, it goes when you're having fun. So, you know, we know it's, you know, to complete the whole Bhakti by Bhava, which is a... it really relies completely upon the grace of the Lord to be able to understand it, and you know, for the Lord to give us the time, the facility, the opportunity within our lives that we have that you know, that we can actually, you know, even come, and then having come along to be able to do the research and, you know, study and to comprehend, all totally relying upon us having sufficient devotion. And where that, if that devotion is not there, it just will not happen. Which is, you know, very significant from Sukadeva Goswami, because you know, he's the son of Vyasadeva, vastly learned. We've understood that Pariksit Maharaj is obviously vastly learned, very self-realized, but you know, he still knows, despite all of one's qualifications, you know, as a there needs to be an ongoing devotion and love, devotional service to the Supreme Lord, in order for that transcendental knowledge to continuously flow through one's heart, and from the heart throughout through one's words, when you're doing an essay, into your pen, this. My brother was he passed away, but he was a very brilliant musician, and I used to make portraits. So you know, he would say to me, I can't understand how, you know, that can come, you know, through your eyes and, you know, into your hands and into this painting like that. And I would say, I can't understand how that comes through your ears, you know, through your hands like that. But it is by the grace of the Lord, ultimately, you know, that something, you know, comes from the heart, from the mind, from the hands, from the words. It's all depending upon that. You know, Sukadeva Goswami, even with his qualifications, so that we have to consider, you know, ourselves. But the other thing we should take heart is that, you know, he is saying that, you know, consider, he's described the potencies of Prabhavishnu. You know, we have our Prabhavishnu Swami, who travels all around the world preaching Krishna consciousness due to the being just touched by the power of the Lord. You know? So we should also take heart that the Supreme Lord is so powerful, his power, that if there's a tinge of bhakti, it can purify the most sinful of sinful persons. You know, all we're asking, you know, just to complete the bhakti by bhava. So you know, these prayers here are very, very revealing. You know, he doesn't just, he's asked these questions by Pariksit Maharaj, and he doesn't just launch in, look, I've read all about it. Just before he attempts, you know, just offers his obeisances to the Lord, to the spiritual master, summons, you know, some proper bhakti, you know, reflects on how merciful and how powerful the Lord is, how wonderful the Lord is, how sweet, how kind, how everything is depending on him. Then he actually begins to, you know, and literally by doing that, even his prayers are filled with some of the answers, you know, for Pariksit Maharaj. Verse 22, may the Lord, who in the beginning of creation amplified the potent knowledge of Brahma from within his heart and inspired him with full knowledge of creation and of his own self, and who appeared to be generated from the mouth of Brahma, pleased with me. In the beginning, he amplified the knowledge of Brahma from within Brahma's heart, inspired him with full knowledge of creation and his own self, and that potent knowledge appeared to be generated from the mouth of Brahma, but it was actually coming, as we said, from the heart of Brahma and then expressed through his mouth. In other words, may that person be pleased with me. That person is pleased with me, then that, you know, I will be able to describe the Lord's pastimes in relationship to his creation, and, you know, so many different pastimes, to answer all of your questions. That Lord, you know, is pleased with me.
Yeah.
Prasad. Yes. Was it carefully pass him. Sukadeva Goswami, in his case, of course, in verse 22, the Prabhupada says, he's praying from the Lord that by dint of being inspired within by the Lord, so that Sukadeva could rightly explain the facts and figures of creation as acquired by Maharaj Bhikkhu. So he didn't want to be a theoretical figure of a mundane scholar. He wanted the Lord to reveal everything exactly as it is. In verse 23 it says, may the Supreme Lord who enlivens the materially created bodies of the elements by lying down within the universe, and who in his Purusha incarnation causes the living being to be subjected to the 16 divisions of the material modes which are his generator, be pleased to decorate my statements. Here is a description about, now the Lord enlivens the materially created bodies of the elements. Bodies of elements. He lies down within the universe as a Purusha incarnation. He causes the living being to be subject to the 16 divisions of material bodies, which are his generator, being pleased to be pleased to decorate my statements. So, some of the technicalities of this verse we can take up later, but the essential point we understand here is that, so David Goswami is thinking about it, by the Lord entering within, he empowers everything to happen. All the elements, you know, become as fire is had, acts like fire because the Lord enters within. Water acts like water, air acts like air, they all have their qualities, we'll see that in the next chapter. And you know, it's because the Lord is empowering. In essence, Sukadeva Goswami, he says, be pleased to decorate my statements. He wants the Lord to enter within his words, which the Lord has created himself, and literally create beauty and literally ornaments in his word. Words so potent with the Lord's presence that they, you know, literally filled with the sweetness of the Lord. One can taste the sweetness of the Lord. One can taste the magnanimous qualities of the Lord through those words. One can literally taste transcendental nectar or rasa. You know, in essence, this is what Sukadevi Goswami is saying within my words like that. And of course, he's asking, you know, may my words not be without your presence. May you be the enjoyer of my words. Prabhupada gives some really nice statements in his purport. A fully dependent devotee like Sukadevi Goswami invokes the pleasure of the Lord so that his statements may be successful and appreciated by the hearers. It's a very good quality to have. And a devotee understands that if the Lord actually enters within one's words and empowers one's words, you can actually say something to someone who's for their entire life refuses to acknowledge or understand you know, the existence of God, or what to speak, you know, of, that they should ever, you know, serve, you know, God. But one's words can be so empowered that even that person, you can say something to them and it will melt their hearts. Melt their hearts, they will become a great devotee of the Lord. And then an example. A devotee always sees himself as an instrument. He declines to take any credit for anything. So, in essence, he's praying to the Lord not just to help him to present things nicely, but for the benefit of all his listeners. Finally, in this chapter, he says, I offer my special obeisances under Srila Vyasadeva, the incarnation of Vasudeva, who compiled the Vedic scriptures. The pure devotees drink up the nectar and transcendental knowledge dropping from the lotus-like mouth of the Lord. Prabhupada gives a very, very nice report there. That you know, we understand the transcendental knowledge is transferred from the Lord to the heart of Brahma, and then comes down to the disciple succession to Srila Vyasadeva. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is, as Prabhupada mentions in his purport, he's giving a little further advance on this, that the nectar from Krishna's own personal mouth is actually transferred to his different consorts, the gopis and you know, Radharani, and thus they learn the finer arts of music, dance, dressing, decorations and all such things which are relished by the Lord. So they learn the art of dancing in the spiritual world, where they can dance with God. You know, you imagine, God walks into the room, says, can I have this next dance? How will you dance? He says, pick it. And that's a different demonstration. So, you know, Krishna is actually personally teaching through his own conversations and his activities. Fans, dressing, decorations, all such things which, you know, the Lord relishes himself. So Prabhupada said, by gradual development of transcendental knowledge, one can rise to the stage of transcendental arts of music and dance displayed by the Lord in his Rasa Leela. So, to that extent, and of course, devotees who, in this lifetime, there's no reason why, you know, any of the devotees in this room you cannot achieve complete perfection, and somewhere in this lifetime, literally, you know, in the unmanifest pastimes, where the Lord appears to them, you know, personally, you know, dances with the devotees and sings with them. And that's it is a reality. That is the, you know, other end of the scale. If it doesn't happen in this lifetime, we should understand that as far as we progress in this lifetime, then we may in our next life, you know, come to that point. You know, or in our next life, Krishna may give us birth in a certain, you know, place where, as a result of everything, you know, we've progressed to in this lifetime, in the next lifetime, getting that next level of very, very elevated, you know, direct association, literally direct the lips of the Supreme Lord himself. I thought you were going to say you always have ambitions of Christian dancing. Kissing and embracing, you're saying. I didn't realise we had a gopi in it. No, go on. Yes. Well, that's the, you know, that's the kindness of Krishna. Yeah. The thing is that the process of devotional service is not. You know, we rely on the fact that the Lord is Prabhupada Vishnu. He is unlimitedly powerful and potent, and his energies coming into contact with him, you know, if a devotee remains in his contact, you have to understand that he will empower you to do inconceivable things, you know, beyond what you can ever imagine yourself doing now. Yeah. This is what, you know, we go back to the previous verse. Okay. The Lord enters within the elements. You know, he's so powerful. The sun sits in the sky. Energy just sustain. It is just a small sample of you know, tiny insignificance, you know, for the Supreme Lord, you know, it is just such an insignificant display of energy for us. You know, so such a person who is so powerful, so potent. The thing is that we don't quite really come to terms with how inconceivable God is, Krishna is. You know, we've been hearing about him being inconceivably powerful. Sometimes, like the frog in the well we had the other day, we sort of measure, but you know, his potencies are so deep that if we ever get just a proper touch of realization of how powerful how wonderful his energies are, then there's no doubt that, yes, I'm sticking with him. Oh, no, be okay. That is, you know, the process of bhakti that, you know, the monkey and the cat. The monkey putting life to its mother by its own power. The devotee takes the process of the cat, where the cat, the mother does all the work. The mother, mostly, she carries it. We depend completely on the Lord and the Father, that he is so powerful, so free, that he is not so this question is not the problem. How can we do this question with simple people? You know, be part of the movement like that. And he said, you know, how can you question the potency of the Lord? The Lord's holy name, the purify, is there some limit you're putting? Well, since then, the Lord, there's hope for the Lord. You can have a look at me. There's hope for me. There's hope for everyone. Believe me. Yeah, go on. The parent will see him and sort of help him, you know, so in that way the child is able to do something miraculous with the parent wouldn't be able to do otherwise. The child gets the sense of him doing something wonderful, you know, so that's another nice example. The other thing that the cat is getting is that, you know, the cat will take the kitten, and seeing that the kitten is incapable of doing something, they pick the kitten up and put it there, and then the kitten will do what it's supposed to do. Sometimes the kitten is not drinking milk. The cat may reach over and pull the milk over and drink some milk. So, you know, the cat is actually, well, doing certain things for the kitten, the kitten is unable to do, to the point where the kitten can take up so I can do something that the mother wants it to do, like that. So that's the example. We're doing as much as we can. So if you say she's not working, but she doesn't have to, you know, she just slept, but you know, the kitten's not doing something and it's got to be done. If it's in a dangerous place or what have you, she will then, you know. The Krishna's like that. He's carrying, knowing I carry what you lack. You can't do that at all. You're lacking. I carry what you have. So I preserve what you have. What you do have, you know, that's fine. You keep doing that and make sure that you don't interfere. So it's completely different. And finally, in verse 25, of course, it says, "My dear Brahma, the firstborn, on being questioned by Narada, exactly advised him on this subject as it was directly spoken by the Lord to his own son, who was impregnated with Vedic knowledge from his very birth." So basically, he's praying for the mercy of the Lord so that he might be able to repeat the very same message. So that was an analysis of Sri Shukadeva Goswami's prayers. That was actually one of the questions, Purva Svajaya questions, 12 to 24. And you just had to jot down, of course, make notes, added to your already extensive notes, some of the main points of his different prayers. Any questions on that, or comments, or any questions on any other? Okay. Yeah. Chapter 5, there's some quite technical things there related to creation. We're not going to get too technical at this point. You know, we'll just, some of the questions that we can just answer simply, the purpose of questions. Some of these concepts of creation will come up in later chapters and cantos that we look at, so I don't need to, you know, slow down with details of creation. I'm not going to drill you too much in the exams or what have you. It doesn't come up too much in the essay. So, you know, at a later stage, we can, you know, we'll get to, you know, just understand some of the fundamentals, and then later on we'll go into this in a lot more detail. We'll come back to this when it comes up in other cantos and that as well. Now, again, we looked at verses 17 and 18 in this fourth chapter, how the Lord is so powerful that he can purify everyone, even the great, and, you know, people who may be considering very sinful lives. When you get a chance, have a really good look at those purports. They have some wonderful statements by Prabhupada in relationship to Prabhupada's moon and mission. You might want to, you know, reflect upon those. They're very important verses and very significant. You shouldn't really, out of, you know, this whole fourth chapter, we've taken, you know, this wonderful mood of Sukadeva Goswami praying for the Lord so that he can speak nicely and understand properly. But those couple of verses in the purports are extremely important to the preaching mood and mission, you know, of Prabhupada. So have when you get a chance, have a good look at those and summarise some of the statements as far as the mood and mission. Very, very quickly, some of the statements. An overview, in essence, of Srishti Tattva, or, you know, the science of creation. We've already seen in the fourth chapter, in essence, Sukadeva Goswami is explaining that it's the Lord who enlivens the material elements by entering within the universe. as his Purusha incarnation. So this is, he's already begun describing creation. Prabhupada describes there, he first entered the vacuum of the material universe, and thus all things gradually develop one after another. So that's the very beginning of the process. The Lord enters, everything happens by his potency. It described in that verse 16 principal creative elements. Earth, water, fire, air, sky, and the 11 sense organs, first developed from the Lord himself, and then was shared by the living entities. Those material elements are actually created for the enjoyment of the living entities. But that beautiful arrangement of material foundation principle of understanding. Now, in chapter 5, Prabhupada's purport to verse 2, he describes that in the phenomenal world, three things are factually observed. So this is three things that are part of creation. The living beings, the manifest world, and the ultimate control are over both. So when we discuss creation, three things are discussed. The first under Krishna is not much rather wonder about the existence of someone more powerful than Lord Brahma himself. We see that even in verse 4. He says, "My dear father, what is the source of your knowledge? Under whose protection are you standing? And under whom are you working? What is your real position? Do you alone create all entities with material elements by your personal energy?" In verse 7, he goes on to say that we are moved to wonder about the existence of someone more powerful than you when we think of your great austerities. Even though your good self is so powerful, still the fact that you're performing austerities, you derive some intelligence, whatever source indicates that there's someone else. God, because God doesn't need help from anyone. Prabhupada mentions that in purport. The very concept of God is just independent of any being. No one needs that. That's Ahangra Hokasana, it's a Sanskrit word, Ahangra Hokasana. The process of transcendental realization where one becomes God. Prabhupada says no one can actually become God by undergoing any process of transcendental realization. So, you would understand, well, you can't become God. there must be someone else who's in that position. Yeah?
Two young guys in urban yoga,
down there. No. I took my daughters there at one time, when they were about 12-ish, and I, on the way, because I was driving from the farm, I was telling them, some people don't believe in God. There's not some people actually exist. And when we got to the crossroads, we sat down, and there was a couple of boys, a girl, about 18, and we're doing yoga, and what's the goal? We're becoming God.
Yeah.
And like that. And my girls just, they couldn't believe it. But actually, I'm just wondering if the best preaching, would be is to burst out laughing.
Yeah, but they will not come. This way
I think you're right. Actually. I think you're right. But Krishna did that. Krishna did that. When there was the false Vasudeva who came before Krishna and Balaram, and Krishna and Balaram, he was and the false Vasudeva saying, "You Krishna, you give up your arms and your disc and what have you." And they laughed. Alright, so, there are some clues why you ask that question. Explain the analogy of the frog in the well. Who would like to do that? Who would like to explain?
Because of the limited understanding of the well.
Yeah. You sure it's a she?
Oh.
I was told once that you hear people say, especially Australians, there's some car problem. Oh, she's giving me trouble like this. And I said, and then I know sometimes it's he. I said, why sometimes you refer to some machines she and others he? Because if they give me trouble, it's a she. And it's a public system. So I was wondering about the frog, whether that was a subconscious. Super. Okay. These are the a little education into the Australian mind. But yeah, you're going. So what was she doing?
The frog cannot understand. Good. Cannot understand that the vastness of the vehicle,
yes,
can't be perceived with a limited mindset.
Yeah. So there's a
the fact is that just because it's not within my experience, it can't be true.
Yes. Yeah. And he's also measuring the ocean according to his experience. Yeah. And ultimately he dies without ever knowing what the ocean is like. Okay. Third question, what is the meaning of Svarupchisa? And what is the rock of creation as described in verse 11? Svarupchisa means what? The Lord's effulgence, yes. In other words, the Brahma Jyoti. Brahma Jyoti, in essence, is the Lord's spiritual energy. The Prabhupada says, Brahmaji clears up the wrong impression held by the less intelligent and affirms that he creates the universal variegatedness after the potential creation by the glaring effulgence of Lord Sri Krishna. So Brahmaji is explaining to Narada that, yes, I create the variegatedness within the universe after the universe has been created. You know, all the potential in the seed-like form by the Lord's glaring effulgence, his Brahma Jyoti.
The Lord created
the Brahma Jyoti, in essence, has the seed of potencies for everything required to manifest the material world. The material world exists. That feature is a shadow of the. That Brahma Jyoti has the quality of existence. And we don't get too technical, but the seeds of the material world in effect is a shadow of the chit potency, and it rests upon the Brahma Jyoti.
I thought the universe is floating in the Brahma Jyoti because Paranamatakashaya Vishnu is lying in some part of the Brahma Jyoti, and from the universes come, and he enters into each of those universes, and then Lord Brahma comes from his navel. So, why are you saying that the elements are within the Brahma Jyoti?
Yep. We'll car park that one. Because it's especially at this stage of time, and after one class, it's a little technical. We will cover that, so you can remember that. But just very quickly, the Lord is actually Mahavishnu is within the Viraj River, or the causal ocean, the Karana ocean, and we won't go past it. Prabhupada gives you the example that just as a small seed of a banyan fruit has the potency to create a big banyan tree, the Lord disseminates all varieties of seeds by his potential Brahma Jyoti, Sva Ruchisha. And the seeds are made to develop by the watering process of persons like Brahma. Just as a gardener helps plants and orchards to grow by the watering process. So, you see, the Brahma Jyoti is this potential seed of existence of the material creation. We'll look at that a little later. And Brahma, a little watering, and, you know, the potential and material variegatedness will grow from that seed. That's the analogy given there. Prabhupada gives a nice example in the purport. He says, in the material world, the sun is the cause of all illumination. Fire, electricity, the rays of the moon, etc. Everything that's illuminating actually is coming from the sun. All luminaries in the sky are creations of the sun. The sun is created by the Brahma Jyoti, and the Brahma Jyoti is the effulgence of the Lord. Thus, the ultimate cause of creation is the Lord. So in this way, he's answering the question. He's also describing the process of creation by also saying that it's not me who's the original cause of all causes. What's this chapter called? Cause of all causes. It makes sense. The Lord Brahma is explaining, I'm not the cause of all causes. It is someone else. That is Krishna. And by he has put the potency of material creation within his Brahma Jyoti, and you know, I secondarily help those potencies to manifest. Now, in verse 13, there's a description of the material energy. The illusory energy of the Lord cannot take precedence, being ashamed of her position, but those who are bewildered by her always talk nonsense, being absorbed in thoughts of I and it is mine. We have to compare that with the description given in the 7th chapter of the 1st canto, verses 4 and 5. In those verses, okay, we see that in verse 4, some of the main points that we can take of similarity is that his external energy is under his full control. The external energy is compared to darkness because it keeps the living entities in the darkness of ignorance. Verse number 5, chapter 7 of the first canto, says, due to this external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the modes of material nature, thinks himself as a material product, and thus undergoes reactions of material miseries. So, we see that here, it's an expansion of that same understanding. Right? That, you know, the living entities are bewildered by her, and they're absorbed in thoughts of it is I and mine. In other words, he thinks himself as a material product. It's the same statement with just a little bit more definition to the statement. You know, if we say previously that the material energy makes one identify himself with a material element, give us a little bit more description of that. Oh, he thinks in terms of I and mine. It's an expanding, the same. Back to this at a later stage, but there's no need for us to get too technical at this point. The last part of this chapter we actually covered when we did the universal form, and many of the last verses are describing the universal form. In verse 14 it describes that the five elements, elementary ingredients of creation, the interaction thereof set up by eternal time, and the intuition or nature of the individual living beings are all differentiated parts and parcels of the personality of Godhead Vasudev, and in truth there is no other value in them. The main thing to take from that, we later on we'll look very carefully at the different elements, components of this, but basically saying all these different components are different parts and parcels of the personality of Godhead. They are, you know, His energies. They're resting on, those truths are resting on Him. Whatever truth they have, in whatever qualities they have, you know, there is no other value in them than what He invests in them. Ultimately, nothing exists other than the Lord. Take that statement. Nothing exists other than the Lord. Nothing can exist beyond the Lord. Everything is produced by the external or the internal energies of Krishna. In text 15, the Vedic literatures are made by and meant for the Supreme Lord. Now, in text 15, 16 and 17, some of the qualities of the shelter of the universe, the qualities of the Lord, are described. So he's saying there's nothing other than the Lord, and then he goes to describe some of the qualities. We're not going to go too much into those ones either, because we're actually going to look in the next lesson, where we actually finish this unit, we're going to look at the qualities of the Lord. And these few verses here will be part of that. So we're just going to leave that little part there. Verse, so 15 to 18, even verse 18. The Supreme Lord is pure spiritual form, transcendental to all material qualities, yet for the sake of creation, the material world and its maintenance and annihilation, He accepts through His external energy the material modes of nature called goodness, passion and ignorance. It's a little technical, but it's describing the qualities of the Lord. We will look at that later on. Verse 19, these three modes of material nature being further manifested as matter, knowledge and activities, put the eternally transcendental living entity under conditions of cause and effect and make him responsible for such activities. So the Lord Himself sets up cause and effect through the different modes of material nature. Next verse, the superseer, the Lord, is beyond the perception, the material senses of the living entities because of the above mentioned three modes of nature. But He is the controller of everyone, including them. So He controls the modes of material nature in such a way that people are completely bewildered and cannot understand the truth, who is the Lord. Verse 21. The Lord, who is the controller of all energies, thus creates by His own potencies eternal time, the fate of the living entities and their nature for which they were created, and He again merges them independently. So He's creating everything to do with the existence of the living entity. Time, fate, their nature. Then they all merge back into the Lord when he desires, and then when He desires, those things are all manifested. Question 5 in our homework question is, at what point is Kala, eternal time, manifest, and what is its role? Now, Prabhupada mentions in his purport that Kala or time is a synonym of nature. And it is the transformed manifestation of the principles of material creation. As such, Kala may be taken as the first cause of all creation, and by transformation of nature, different activities in the material world become visible. So he's explaining there Kala in his purport. At what point does Kala manifest? He's saying at the very beginning, and then literally as the material activities happen, that is another form of time. So we can say at the beginning and then continuously throughout creation. It's basically what Prabhupada is saying there. You know, what role is it playing? Literally, it's agitating the modes of material nature to create the various activities. So then in the next verse he says, material activities are caused by the mahat-tattvas being agitated. At first there is transformation of the modes of goodness and passion, later due to the modes of ignorance, matter, its knowledge and different activities of the material world come into play. I'll just answer one more question. One, what is Tanmatra? In the purport to text 25, Prabhupada says, Tanmatra, sound. Tanmatra is sound. Sound is the subtle form of sky. So, you know, Tanmatra is the sound, the element sound, which is the subtle form of sky. He gives an example that, you know, it represents the actual object in a subtle way. So if I say apple, you know, it subtly represents something which is actually an apple. Last question, describe the transformations of the modes of ignorance, goodness and passion from 25 to 31. I won't answer that. Basically you can literally just take it straight from the text. The texts themselves describe all that. We're not going into the technicalities at this point, and all the rest of it is a discussion of the Virata Rupa. There's one final question which we did answer, but if you want me to say it again, I will, and that is, name the 14 planetary systems. Do you know that? I'll say it again. Yeah, 14, can someone say the 14 planetary systems? They're saying take it from this chapter, verses 39 to 41, and from the first chapter, verses 26 to 28. So 14. Yeah, 14. Can you name them all? Oh. Yeah. Yeah. What's about that? Earth. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's good. So I'll name them. If you look at those verses, they're a little mixed up, so it's not easy, but I'll give you a summary. The seven lower planetary systems are described, and above them is the Earth. So if you look at verse 25, 38, 42, it describes that the lower planetary systems plus Earth is basically Bhuloka. Right? Bhuloka. Sometimes I've seen that as Bhuloka. Yeah. Bhu. I think the same. Now, it also has described that we have. So, Bhuloka is considered the lower planetary systems, of which Earth is the topmost part of that. So the Earth planetary system, sometimes we say Bhuloka, we refer to Earth. It's the topmost part of that. Above Bhuloka is Bhuvaloka. And above that is Satyaloka. Now in between there, so let's see, we've got seven plus Earth is Bhuloka. So we've got eight and six to go. Bhuvaloka is one. There's Maha, Janus, Tapas, Satya. No. Humble Pabaha Swa. Oh, we got, we said Swa. Oh, I think I left out Swa. Seven planetary systems is the lower planetary systems. Earth, eight. That's considered Bhuloka. Nine is Bhuva. Ten is Swa. Swa Loka or Swarga Loka. And then there is Maha, Tapas, Maha, Janus, Tapas, and Satya. Yeah, that's Brahmaloka. So that's 14. Yeah?